This 3 days that we'll be spending together is about marriage, but a distinctly Christian marriage. I want to talk about things that are biblical. Now, that's important to say at the beginning because what we're going to be talking about, and today we'll demonstrate this, is cross-culture. This is cross-grained to the culture. But that's okay because we have faith. Now, faith is not saying to God, I'm going to tell you what I want you to give me and I'll be patient until you do. Faith is saying, now listen closely, God, I know that you know better about how to do life than I do. And so when my way of thinking and your way of thinking are not commensurate, they're not the same, I'm going to do it your way. Now, I do not know an area of life where that's more applicable than in reference to our marriages. And so that's going to be part of what we're going to hear this morning. I had planned first to say today to talk about how to love a wife, and then tomorrow to do how to love a husband. But I decided to flip those over because of this experiment, this piece of paper that Dan has handed out. So today I want to talk about how to love a husband. Let's begin. A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband, but she which makes him ashamed is as rottenness in his bones. Proverbs 12 and verse 4. What is it that makes a woman a crown to her husband? He who finds a wife, you know, one time Cindy and I, that not very long ago, we were leaving worship, beautiful day, got in our car and we pulled out, and one of our teenage girls, you know, people were meandering about the lot, and she happened to cross in front of our car and we waved at her, have a nice day. And I said, Cindy, isn't she a pretty thing? And she said, Glenn, I don't think you should call women things. And I said, well, honey, the good book says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtaineth favor of the Lord. I love it when that happens. It so seldom does. I want to ask you this question. What makes a wife a good thing? Now, for those of you who are wives, I ask you this question. What is it that makes you good? I mean, what is it that makes you a crown to your husband? And the answer is, at least on its face, that you have unique qualities that nothing else in creation, no one else in creation has. And you think about God's design and that the genders, the male and female, wasn't an accident. It was on purpose. It was to prepare people for the different roles he was going to present to them. A woman is designed by God to fulfill the role in the home that he intended for her to fulfill. A man is different from a woman. Now, does anybody in this room disagree with that? We're different. I'm telling you, we are different. But that's not an accident of nature. That's a design of God. You men would make terrible women and ugly to boot. Wouldn't you be? Well, anyway, I want you to think of it that way. And when we enter into these two discussions today and tomorrow about how to love a husband, how to love a wife, keep that in mind. We're different because of design. Now, here's the position. In the King James translation, in Genesis 2 and 18, you have this terminology, and you're familiar with it, that the wife was created for the husband, took a rib from Adam, made a woman, and God said, I did this for her to be a help meet for him. Now, what we did is that we compressed them together, those two words, help and meet, and we made one word. We sort of manufactured a word, and we said, helpmate. And sometimes you'll hear people say that today, you know, isn't she a good helpmate to him? Well, the only problem with that is that that's not a real word. The real words were help and meet. Now, you know what help means, and meet means, it's old English, and it means perfectly suited for. That's a big deal. He created a custom-made woman. It wasn't a cafeteria line. It didn't give Adam a piece of paper and say, check off what you'd want, you know, blonde or redhead or brunette or, you know, large or small or tall or short. He created the woman and she was for him. Now, bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of a man. Now, here was the design that continued on. Now, brace yourself, because I'm about to go way cross-culture. Biblically speaking, it was never a design for marriage to be two parallel lives going along together through life. I understand about marriage, and that there's some senses in which that's true, but that's not the biblical design for marriage. It was always a man and a wife in a supportive role along with her husband. She was always to play the supportive role. Now, that's the design of help meet. That's the meaning of help meet. When you get to the New Testament, God didn't change his mind. And I know that you're familiar with these verses. Just bear with me as we go through them. So here's 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. Now, as we go through them, be impressed with the lack of ambiguity. The world clouds things, the Bible clarifies, and appreciate how plainly these things are said. And then as we do this too, I want you to think about your faith. Remember, faith is saying to God, I know that you know better than me, and if my way and your way aren't the same, I'm going to go with your way. Is that true about family or about how we do home? All right, here's 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 3. I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ. The head of the woman is the man. The head of Christ is God. Same chapter now, verse 8 and 9. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. Now, I don't know what would happen if you went on Oprah Winfrey's show and you talk about these things. I think they would beat you about the head and shoulders. But that's not who I'm talking to. I'm talking to you. All right, here we go. 1 Peter 3:1. Likewise, you wives, be in submission to your own husbands. Incidentally, I mentioned this word yesterday because it was in one of the sermons. Idios, and it's the same word from which we get our English word idiot. But this doesn't mean be in subjection to your idiot husband. It means idiosyncrasy. You know, we talk about uniqueness. And he is uniquely yours. He is your husband. He is your man. And he says, be in subjection or submission to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they may also without the word be won by the conversation of the wives. In this chapter, it's particularly about a Christian woman who married an unbelieving husband, and he's going to talk about how you can bring your husband to Christ. What I want you to see, though, is that this is about submission. Now look at 1 Peter 3:5. After this manner also, in the time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection to their own husbands. And then he uses an Old Testament illustration. You remember Sarah and Abraham. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham. I'm telling you, this is plain talk. This is strong language. Calling him Lord. Calling him Lord. Can you imagine how different that is from the culture in which we live? But I came to say, you know what? God knows better than we do about how to do marriage. Why don't we get back to doing it His way? Want to be successful? I'm telling you, you and I don't have enough human ingenuity to build a successful family without the Lord. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Psalm 127, right? So she called Abraham Lord. Now, parenthetically, the word Lord here is the same word that the Bible uses for Jesus Christ, Lord. Doesn't mean that your husband is your Lord, but it does elevate him in this relationship. She called him Lord. Now you might figure that the next line would be, don't you think that's cute? Isn't that sweet? She called him Lord. Isn't that funny? That's not what the next line says. It says, whose daughters you are if you do well. That's a stamp of endorsement that God placed on Sarah. Now, Cinda doesn't, it's not about terminology here. It's about attitude. And in the house now, Cindy doesn't call me Lord, but you know, sometimes I'll say, Cindy, sometimes I can't make her hear me, you know, across the house. She'll be doing something, and so then I use her whole name, Cynthia, Cynthia, and she'll, sir. I kind of like that. And anyway, Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Now you get to Ephesians 5:22. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. The word Lord there means Jesus. But I want you to hear me. It's the same word as what Sarah used in reference to Abraham. Lord. And this says, obey your husbands. 33. This is the end of that chapter that talks about how the church is to Christ, what a wife is to her husband. Then it gets to the last verse, verse 33, and he kind of winds it up. I kind of think that this is representing the greatest need of a husband, greatest need of a wife. You can disagree about that if you like. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself. She needs a husband who loves her like he loves his own body. And the wife see, this is King James, that she reverence her husband. Now here's the limit. So there's no ambiguity about the role that the wife plays, the role the husband plays. But is there an exception to that rule? Is there an exception to the rule that she is to have a submissive role to her husband? And the answer is yes, there's an exception. It would be Acts 5 and 29, where the Bible says we ought to obey God rather than men. If your husband requires something of you that is inconsistent with Jesus Christ, you ought to obey Jesus Christ and not your husband. So you put the Lord first. All right. I've been waiting to get to this slide. Here's the part. See, I kind of think that where I've been going up until this point, you probably already were familiar with. I expect you've already read those verses and you know them, and you're working by the grace of God to be the kind of wife that He wants you to be. Because you know that we live in a triangle. Our marriages are triangles, aren't they? It's not just a straight line between my wife and me. And how I treat her isn't just it's a triangle. It's God and my wife and me. So how I treat her has implications not just to how my relationship will be to her, but how my relationship will be to God. And one day I'm going to be judged, and part of that on which I will be judged is how I treated my wife. Is that a true statement? Or how a wife treats her husband? You live in a triangle in your marriage. It's important to realize it. Having said that, God put the husband over the wife. But then He put something in that husband that's not in that wife. And it's my theory that a man's like a dog and a woman's like a cat. I mean, in the marriage. And if I offend anybody with this, it's not my intention, so please forgive me. But I'm calling the men a dog, and I guess I'm one of those myself. Here's what I mean. You come home from work and you have a cat. We have had cats. I decided we would never have an indoor cat. I've always thought that the worst thing about a cat is that he's not a dog. But particularly an inside cat. We're just not going to have an inside cat. And then Cindy, when Hannah was a teenager, she's about 14, our daughter, why, Cindy used the magic words on me. And she said, "Well, Glenn, she's only going to be young once." So we got a cat in the house. And let me tell you about a cat. How many of you have cats? Oh, well, that's what I thought. Well, okay. You come home, you know, and so you open the door, and there she is. There's your cat across the room there. And you say, "Honey, come here. I want to stroke you and love on you, and I bought you some food that costs more than what I'm going to eat tonight." Now I want to ask you a question. What's she going to do? And the answer is that someday she's going to come to you, and someday she's going to do this. Now, you know I'm right. Anybody want to disagree? You say, "Wow, that's strange behavior. I'm going to take her to the vet." Take her to the vet. Put her up on the table, and the man says, "What seems to be the problem?" And you can explain. "I come home sometimes, and she, just what I just said." You explain it, and you know what the vet's going to say? "Ma'am, that's a cat. That'll be $75. That's what he's going to say. Now you come home. What if you have a dog? In Alabama, we say it with a W. What if you have one of those and you come home? You open the door and you say, "Come here, boy. I want to pet you, and I want to feed you some food that I bought from Sam's. It's from an 80-pound bag. Cost $1.50. Tastes like cardboard." You're not going to say that whole sentence, are you? Because when you get to the door, He's coming. You may have beat that dog the day before. The difference will be that when he comes to you, he's going to tuck his tail, but he's still coming. He can't help it. He can't help it. Right? Now, if he stops doing that, and you take him to the vet, and you explain it, the vet's going to say, "We better check him out. Something's going on. We probably need to worm this dog." Right? Something's going on with this dog. Right? Now, how do you explain that? The answer is that that God didn't make dogs the same as cats. They're different. I'm here to tell you that God didn't make men the same way that He made women. But I will have you know that God put something in a man that responds to a gentle, feminine woman, wife, who respects her and loves and admires her husband. I'm telling you, it's a power. And I don't think he has it over her. I don't think he does. I think that they're just different. And I think I could illustrate that biblically, because in 1 Peter chapter 3, you have a case where a woman is a Christian and her husband's not. And you can convert him, or at least your best chance at converting him to Christ, he says, is by living in front of him a Christian, faithful Christian life, be in submission to him and show him by the way that you live. And there's a great chance he'll be influenced to come to Christ. Well, now, isn't it interesting that biblically that's not stated in the reverse gender? I suppose there's some truth in the reverse, but that's not how it's portrayed. It's about a woman who has this power over her husband. A man's like a dog, and a woman's like a cat. All right, suggestions. Let's wind it up. Number one, remember that you'll never force him into loving you. He's going to love you because you're feminine. Don't try to be like a man. He didn't marry you because I never wanted a man. Any of you guys ever wanted to marry a man? Well, probably not. You know what? I wanted a girl. I wanted to marry me a girl. And I want her to act like a girl. I don't need somebody to come in there and dominate the house. I want somebody to be a woman. I want her to be feminine. You want to know the greatest music in the world to a man? The greatest music in the world to the ears of a man is his wife humming as she's about the house. And there's something about the swish of her skirt as she hums about the house. Yeah. You women are thinking, I see a little eye rolling going on there. And every man is saying, yep, that's it, boy. He's got that right. All right. Remember, you'll never force him into loving you. He will love you because of the tender, gentle respect that you have for him, and kindness and femininity. Feminist and feminine are right beside one another in the dictionary, but I declare they're very far apart. Two, resist maternal correcting. Don't be a chihuahua. I don't mean any offense by this, but you know what can happen with a woman over time? You see a woman with her children, and some of you have small children, and God bless you, and you're doing a great job. But a good mother with small children is correcting them all the time. You know, don't sit there. Honey, sit over here. No, your shoe's untied. Come on, let me tie your shoe. I want you to eat two more bites of those Brussels sprouts or you can't have your dessert. Now, why did you do that? Don't do that anymore, because if you do, I'm going to spank you. And it goes on. That's maternal. What she's saying with her words is, I love you. I love you, and I want to help you be better. I'm helping to grow you up to be a good person. The problem is that sometimes that can bleed over into how she treats her husband. She doesn't mean it. She doesn't mean it. What she means is, I love you, I love you. But what goes into his ears is, you're broken and I need to fix you. Now, do you know what a man's greatest fear is in his marriage? His greatest fear is that he won't be good enough. In the eyes of his wife. You ever give your husband a Hallmark card on an anniversary or birthday or something, and you pay way too much? I bought one for Cindy the other day. Paid $7 for that card. Too much money. Inside the little piece of poetry and maybe a flower. And you know, then you write your husband a note. I love you so much. XX00. And you give him the card. And he appreciates that. But then, you know, tomorrow, what's he going to do with the card? You know, he's going to try to keep it long enough. Maybe put it on the dresser, keep it long enough. Then he's going to throw it away. You want me to tell you how you give your husband a card that he will never throw away? And one day your great-grandchildren are going to open some old trunk somewhere in an attic and pull out some stuff and find that letter because he will never throw it away. You want me to tell you how to do that? And you don't have to spend the money. You can take a piece of legal paper. Ladies, ready for this? I'm telling you, God designed him with purpose. And your man is a man. Incidentally, you didn't want to marry a girl either. You wanted to marry a man. He is what he is because God wanted him to fulfill the role in the home that God gave him. Here's what you do. You take a piece of paper And at the top you write, what I respect about you. And then you make a list. And you fold it up and give it to him. Now, he may shed a tear over that, but I can assure you it will mean so much to him that he will not throw that away because it feeds something he needs. He needs a wife who is feminine, who respects and loves him. And when God built the system the way that he did, he built it with this in mind. Consider why Satan tempted Eve instead of Adam. And the answer is because Eve is softer, gentler. Adam is, you know how we are, we're one-track thinkers. A woman can think multi things that the one just drives me crazy. Cindy can think of all sorts of different things at the same time. And she's, how does she do that? Not me, boy. I think about one thing at a time. That's all I can do. It's because I'm a man. Men and women are different. I think if Satan had tried to tempt Adam first, Adam would have taken that snake by the tail and thrown him. But Eve was impressed. She yielded. When you were little, some people say that wives are, it's like a turtle, and the wife is the inside part, she's soft, and the husband is the shell, the protector, the outside shell. When you were little and you skinned your knee, did you go to your daddy or your mama? If you go to your daddy, you say, I skinned my knee, look, I got some blood on my knee. And he's going to say, rub some dirt in it and get back to playing, you're all right. You go to your mom, and what does she say? Come here, honey. I'm so sorry. Let's get you cleaned up, get you some back pain, and you probably need a Band-Aid, don't you? Right? I suggest we need both in our marriages. I think God made a woman soft like that because of maternal reasons. And ladies and gentlemen, this is why. We got to get back to the Scripture. This jazz that the world's trying to put on you that says men and women are equal is rubbish. And I assure you it will destroy marriages. You'll never, ever find the backside of a good marriage if you follow the world's philosophies. Get away from it. You're not made like that. You're made by the Creator, and you've got to follow Him. Let's get back to doing marriage God's way. God bless you. I'll see you tomorrow, and we'll do how to love a wife.